Well, for those of you uncertain about what today has in store, consider the job of a futurist. Our next guest helps organizations develop a vision extending a decade into the future. Brian David Johnson views himself as a future caster, helping to shape an actionable vision of tomorrow. Mr. Johnson's the futurist in residence at Arizona State University's Center for Science and the Imagination. This week, he's talking with state leaders about Michigan's future at the Mackinac Policy Conference. Anticipating this moment, which for all recorded time has been in the future, I spoke yesterday with Brian David Johnson. I first asked what factors shape an actionable vision of tomorrow.
Well, the work that I do is called future casting, and it is a mix of social science research, of technical investigations, economics. We do some work with trend forecasters as well as a little bit of cultural history. And we mix that in with some work where we do global interviews, where we go around and we interview people about these futures. And we even use a little science fiction to actually model what it will feel like to be a human and live in the future. But I think one of the most important things to remember is that we also ask people, based upon all these inputs, what is the future that you want? And also, what is the future that you want to avoid? Because from those two standpoints, we can turn around and look backwards and say, okay, what are the steps that we need to take today, tomorrow, 5 years from now to get to that future we want and avoid that future we don't want?
Let's go from the what to the how, though, here. It seems that one of the really challenging aspects of future casting, developing these actionable visions of the future, is to navigate all the changes coming at us in the present. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking 10 years into the future. Are you kidding me? How do you take the rapidly unfolding now and create any kind of dependable vision of the future? How do you do that?
Basically, what I tell my students is that it's my job as a futurist to live on the other side of that exponential curve, to live 10 years in the future and have an understanding of where things could go and where we want them to go, and then get prepared for it. And in future casting, part of it is that when you do this modeling, you have to accept, once you've done it, that it's 100% true. But the other thing that you have to accept with 100% certainty is that it will change. Is that really what future casting is a framework to take in all of this disparate information, to process it, to come up with these actionable visions, and then once something new comes in, now you've got a framework to understand it. So it kind of is a mix, and one of the things that future casting does is it embraces uncertainty. One of the things that I like to say is that, you know, uncertainty is the landscape of innovation. It's from that uncertainty. And using the framework and using this approach gives you a way to process new events, new innovations, new changes when they happen.
I know a lot of people feel like they're immersed in the present and in the working world. I think this often means putting out fires. You're not really sculpting any kind of future. You just feel like you're correcting the present. How can people let that go?
I think often people need to give themselves the time and the permission. When I work with companies, when I work with different schools or different areas in the public sector, to take the moment and to think forward, to say, what is that future that I want? What is that future I want to avoid? And imagine it. Because nothing great was ever built by people that wasn't imagined first. And we have to embrace the fact that we will all build our own future. The future is built by people every day. We all are going to build our future. And we have to accept that first and foremost and say, okay, what do I want to do? What do I want for the future of myself, for my family, my community, my church, my town, my state, you name it. And the only way that you can start taking back that control is to first take a moment, give yourself some room, and start asking those questions. Because oftentimes when I ask them, whether it be an average person at a town hall or the CEO of a large company, and I ask that question, what's the future that you want and what's the future that you will want to avoid in 10 years, oftentimes people don't have an answer. And that's really that first step, is to be able to answer that. And once you can start to create that, then you can start to get into those next steps and give you a way to really navigate through some of the challenges that sort of come at us on a daily basis.
I'm talking with futurist Brian David Johnson, who is visiting Michigan and is a speaker at the Mackinac Policy Conference. In your Detroit News piece, you seem quite adamant about not being passive about the future, not just letting it happen, but actively shaping it. My question is this. Broadly, do you think Americans believe that we can shape our future, or do you hear more pessimism on that front?
It's a really interesting time in America. I'm doing a project right now called What's the Future of the American Dream, where I'm going around and holding town halls and doing future casting research on thinking about the future of the American dream. Now, it's nonpartisan. It says that the future involves all of us, and we are at our best when we don't agree with each other. But it really goes out and asks that question, because I found myself asking it about 6 to 8 months ago, and people didn't have an opinion. They actually didn't have a vision for the future of themselves and for the future of the country. And that really bothered me, again, is that you really need to have that vision to start building it. But the more I talk to people and the more I say to them, well, tell me what your vision is, and they begin to talk about it, sometimes it'll be negative, sometimes it'll be worrisome, but I do believe that inherent in our DNA, and this is no more apparent than when you talk to people outside of the U.S., is that there is an optimism in America. There's an optimism for being able to shape the future, being able to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, to be able to do the work. And even though we might have some adversities and challenges, the more I would talk with people, typically that optimism would come out.
I'm reminded of a line from your news piece as well. You also wrote, quote, "Over the past 2 decades as a futurist, I've learned that the way we change the future is to change the story people tell themselves about the future they will live in." So you seem to be suggesting that collectively, we, humanity, does have a vision of the future?
We have to. Human beings are story-believing machines. That's what our brains do. I have lots of work with neuroscientists that's actually how we communicate. It's how we empathize and sympathize, is we actually use story as a way to talk about maybe what happened in your day, again, or maybe even what your hopes are for yourself and your kids and the country. That it's actually stories that capture that and that really inspire us. And that's why I honed in on the American dream, because there's no greater story. There's no greater story that has inspired people to come to the shores, that has driven people to work harder, to be able to dream bigger. That those stories are the things that fuel us.
Policymakers and other officials are always trying to optimize our economic futures. And here in Michigan, there's been a much publicized effort to reinvent the state, to rely less on manufacturing, particularly automobile manufacturing, and to diversify the economy. You must deal with this constantly, I imagine. What advice can you offer to a state like ours that's aiming at some degree of reinvention?
It goes back to that story notion, and that's one of the reasons why I'm here at the Mackinac Policy Conference, is to have those conversations, to sit down with both the public and private leaders and actually do a future casting on the future of Michigan and what's possible. And I think first it's understanding the facts, understanding the social science, understanding what's going to be possible from a technology standpoint, and all those different inputs, and then looking at them. And starting to say, okay, when we put all of these things together, what does that mean for the future of Michigan? Certainly, Michigan has an incredible legacy of manufacturing, but it also has an incredible legacy of design. It also has a really interesting biomedical background. So there's a lot of things, I think, that are going for the state that can really start to fuel what is that dream. What is that new story? And part of why that story is so important, because it starts to inspire the next generation. That's one of the things I spend so much of my time doing, is going out and teaching, going out and spending time with that next generation to inspire them. And that's one of the things that I will be talking about here, is how can you inspire the next generation to stay in Michigan? And how can you attract the next generation to come to Michigan and work, and not only the workers and the labor force, but also for investment, also for attention. That I think there's an incredible infrastructure here that's in place, and so much is kind of untapped. But it also should be said that Michigan, and specifically what's happened in some areas, things like Detroit, and there's some areas where it really has come back. That if you look just, 8 years ago to where we are today, and I'm not saying everything is great, because no, there's still plenty of work to do, but oftentimes I try to tell folks in Michigan that you should give yourselves a little credit. You've actually had some visions, and you've pushed really hard and made some changes, and certainly there's more work to do, but you've shown collectively that it can be done.
Futurist Brian David Johnson, who is visiting Michigan here this week and speaking at the Mackinac Policy Conference, formerly of Intel, currently of Arizona State University. Mr. Johnson, thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.